of our own. One step removed, just beyond the boundaries. Some would say we're on the outside looking in. But from our perspective, we're on the outside looking within. We, the North. Let's go.
Welcome to this edition of the Raptors Watch Podcast. I am Nick Bedard, joined by Kian Sobhani and Josh Howe. What's going on? The season is literally just around the corner, and who better to help us get the party started than the coach?
Hello!
That's right, it's Jack Armstrong. How you doing, coach?
Guys, I'm doing great. Pleasure to be on with you, and really fired up. I think we're about 12 days away from the Raptor season kicking off, so it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, awesome. Jack, let's start with training camp. I know you were probably observing that and taking that in. Can you say if there was anything that you noticed in particular that was being focused on this year in training camp and preseason that was different from last year?
I think the biggest thing was a lot of situational basketball time and score, really trying to improve that component. You know, this is a team over the last few years that has had some struggles, you know, late in quarters, particularly in the last 5 minutes of games, of being able to close the deal, you know, on a consistent basis. So I think there's been a real concerted effort, time and score, you know, what's the right shot, what's the right play, where are guys supposed to be defensively, you know, what are your responsibilities? You know, again, the devil's in the details. So just really being more conscious and aware of all the little components that go into a successful offensive possession and or a successful defensive possession. So a lot of that. And then I would say in general, trying to kind of mix and match and try to get a sense of what combinations are going to work. You know, you add a guy like a Lou Williams and a James Johnson to the mix, which I think were both necessary guys to bring in based upon maybe some scoring issues they had at times last year. You know, Lou Williams will help with that. I think James Johnson will help them immensely with the defensive ability at the 3 and 4. So trying to mix those guys in and yet mix them with different groups and see which combinations kind of mesh and which ones don't. You know, so I think that to me really stood out.
And in terms of training camp, obviously being in Vancouver this year, last 2 years before that was in Halifax. And the players seem to have nothing but praise for the facilities both in Halifax and Vancouver and also for the city. Is this going to be a trend, you know, moving forward, especially with Lyweeke leaving? Are the Raptors still going to be going around to different cities in Canada trying to build that brand?
I think they should, you know, considering that obviously Vancouver doesn't have a team anymore and Toronto is the only NBA team in the country. And more importantly, the fact that, you know, Maple Leaf Sports is owned by both Rogers and Bell, 37.5% each, and all 82 games are on national TV. So, you know, you could watch the Raptors as easily as in Vancouver or Calgary or Edmonton as you can in Toronto or Ottawa or anywhere else. So absolutely, I think it makes just too much sense. You know, you got to try to really make sure that it becomes that national team and that people take pride in it.
Jack, who do you think is the battle right now to win that final roster spot? Anyone jumping out at you?
To win, excuse me, what was that?
The final roster spot.
Oh, the final roster spot. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I would say, you know, off the bat, I would have said Greg Steemsa, you know, and obviously he's got some NBA experience, and he adds a little size and toughness to their team. Kind of reminds me a little bit of kind of what Eric Montross did a long time ago. I'm dating myself. This is my 17th year with the Raptors, so that's a long time ago. But Eric Montross, even a guy like Aaron Gray recently, having that guy that can come in even just for a few minutes when you're playing a difficult matchup like a DeMarcus Cousins or a Dwight Howard or something like that, I think the Raptors are a little weak in terms of size-wise and strength-wise inside. And having a guy like that, along with a guy like Chuck Hayes, who isn't a big guy, but he really knows how to stand his ground in there, I think is going to be important. So I originally said he would be the odds-on guy. I give Jordan Hamilton a lot of credit. He's really made a strong statement for himself. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. I think if Landry Fields didn't have the contract that he did, I think Jordan Hamilton would be neck and neck with a guy like Fields right now. So, but it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing settles out here in the next, you know, a week or so. But I think those two guys have really helped themselves. Cherry is an energetic guy. I love how hard he plays. The issue for him, obviously, is he's caught up in a numbers game right now. When you consider the fact that you have Kyle Lowry and Gravis Vasquez, those guys, those two are going to play all 48 minutes combined at the point guard position. And you even got a guy like Lou Williams, if need be, in a pinch that can play 2 or 3, 4 minutes as a third point guard. So I think that, you know, your needs are more so, you know, do you have that wing stopper? Do you have enough scoring at the wing? Do you have enough shot blocking, rebounding, interior toughness in your front court? So I think you probably look more at those two areas than you would at the point guard. So I think Steensma probably has the best shot. And a kid like Hamilton, hey, you never know. Maybe they make a move.
I agree, Coach. Steensma can, you know, come in when Amir Johnson's when in foul trouble. Or I want to talk about last year and specifically the Raptors' offensive balance. And in the playoffs, you know, they brought that same group of guys back. They've got shooters. They've got, you know, solid guard play. But can you talk about what you see, specifically the offensive balance of the Toronto Raptors?
Well, you used the word, I think it was twice right there, that I agree with you on, and that is solid. You said solid, solid. Mm-hmm. And that's what this team is. Chicago and Cleveland are by far the best two teams in the East. But when you start talking about that next group of teams, I would put the Raptors in that next grouping. And why? Because they're solid. You know, they're sound. I mean, you know, there's a lot of discussion right now about the backcourt, like who's got the best backcourt. And in my opinion, when you go 1-4, I think Toronto does. You know, now everyone's talking about starting backcourts. Well, there's probably better starting backcourts. But when you look at Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Gravis Vasquez, and Lou Williams, I challenge you to look around the NBA and find four better guys that are going to occupy those 96 minutes combined in the NBA. I don't know if you can find that. And I you know, so I think the strength is that balance and having a lot of productivity. And I just think there's a lot of guys that are capable of being good players. Is there a superstar on this team? With all due respect, probably not. But there's a lot of good players. And they kind of remind me a little bit. I'm going to go back to my days as a collegiate coach. And they remind you of having a team with a lot of juniors and seniors and upperclassmen and fifth-year seniors and guys that redshirted. The Raptors don't have necessarily an old team, but they have a lot of young vets. And, you know, you asked me before about, you know, training camp. And I think the third thing that really jumped out at me was the calmness that I felt, the sense of purpose, that very workmanlike, you know. So, but when you have players like that, that really helps. So I think there's a lot of balance offensively. I think this team really, if you had to ask me what one of their strengths is, I think the pass. And not only the pass, the next pass. They like each other. They share it. They give up the good shot to get the great shot. They value possessions. They take good shots. They're disciplined. They're well coached. And they enjoy each other's company. So when you have that, it becomes contagious.
So many times last year, Coach, you know, games were so close, but it didn't seem like we had that one guy who would take the last shot down the stretch. Now we look to DeMar, we look to Kyle, and you know, Lou proved in the preseason that he could take that last shot. But who specifically, if you were coaching the Raptors, would you draw up a play to take the last shot?
Well, I think, first of all, you mentioned the three guys that would be my prime candidates. You know, those would be the three, to me, that you have to somehow, depending on time and score and depending on, obviously, who's still in the game, foul trouble, fatigue, all those types of things. But definitely, you know, Lowry, DeRozan, or Lou Williams would be the guys in my mind. And I also a guy like Vasquez has got the guts to take the shot, live with the shot. You know, it's one thing to take it; it's another thing to live with it. If you don't make it, you know, people are killing you. And I think those guys have the thick skin and the toughness to do it for you. Again, I'll say this though: if they're going to be a really good team this year, there's going to be a night where Jonas Valanciunas has to get a putback on the offensive board to win the game, or Amir Johnson, or Patrick Patterson's got to make a three, or James Johnson's got to come up with a huge block. You know, that's what a good team does. And when you have, again, you know, I go back to the collegiate example. When you got a lot of juniors and seniors, usually you have a different hero every night. And the key is, you don't want guys playing hero ball. You don't want them saying, well, you know, a lot of times you look at the Knicks, everybody stands around and it's mellow. The Lakers, a lot of times when Kobe's healthy, everybody stands around and it's hero ball. And you don't want that. You know, I think what you want is you play solid, sound basketball, you move it, and you give up good shots to get great shots, and you hope the great shot's being taken by a guy that has the gumption and the toughness and the guts to make it.
Yeah, I agree with you. The Spurs don't have a lot of games where they end up being close. Grantland's NBA writer Zach Lowe came out with his 33 crazy predictions for the season, and he predicted that Lowry would make the All-Star team, mostly because of voters' guilt for not voting him in last season. Of course, this prediction means that DeRozan will likely miss this year's All-Star game. Would you agree with him?
I think it's going to be harder for Lowry to make it if Derrick Rose and Rajon Rondo are able to play, because that's the more competition at the point guard spot. So, you know, again, a lot depends on how the voting shakes out. But you know, you put DeRozan more in the wing position, and I think it's more competition for Lowry, quite frankly. So, I honestly don't care if any of them make the All-Star team. I'm sure their agent does, and I'm sure they do from a professional pride standpoint and maybe a bonus. But at the end of the day, it's all about mid-April and beyond. All the other stuff is meaningless. And yeah, it's a pat on the back and it's an ego thing, but, you know, with the extended All-Star break this year, you know, you want guys fresh as daisies down the stretch, and the Raptors have a brutally difficult April schedule. So, to me, all I care about, you know, if I were coaching this team, is, you know, you just winning games, and the All-Star stuff is all secondary. But I think it'll be difficult for both guys to make it because they're on a good team, and I think that when you add a Lou Williams, when you add a James Johnson, and when you have some guys maybe ready to improve a little bit, maybe there's a little less point total and a little less shot opportunities for maybe some of your better players. So that impacts your numbers a little bit. But the number that matters is wins. And the number that matters is what seed you get, and do you have an opportunity to win a playoff round? And to me, those are the things that matter.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts on Bruno so far? What's his ceiling like? Ryan Wolstadt compared him to T-Mac. Is he anywhere close to that?
Well, I was with the Raptors when T-Mac was a young player, and they're different players. T-Mac is very long and athletic, but a guy that's kind of a little more skilled, kind of a point forward, had the potential to be, and could be a really locked down defender. You know, I hadn't seen Bruno in person until camp just a week and a half ago in Vancouver. I obviously had seen him on film, but when I watched him each day in practice, the first thing that jumped out at me was I now understand why they were intrigued with him. And number two, I asked myself, if he was playing at Kentucky or Duke or Indiana or North Carolina right now as a freshman, where would he be picked in the draft? And I would say, you know, there's no question he would be a high lottery pick. You know, so, there's no doubt in my mind that what they saw made complete sense. Now, would they have liked to have maybe picked him at a lower spot? Yeah. But the reality was they knew that between the spot that they picked and where they were going to pick in the second round, somebody was going to take them. So I think, you know, did they reach a little bit? Yeah. But ultimately, you got a guy that you really like on your board and you go with it. He has a nice shooting stroke. I think when he figures out everything defensively in terms of concepts and language and all that, I think he has a potential because of his good lateral quicks, and he's really long to be an outstanding defender. And, you know, handling the ball and being able to get his game off the bounce and creativity and all that, only time will tell. But there's no doubt in my mind, you know, the name that keeps getting tossed around a lot is Rashard Lewis rather than T-Mac, you know, and Dwayne Casey obviously had a lot of experience dealing with Rashard Lewis when Dwayne was an assistant for George Call in Seattle. So it's going to take time. The beautiful thing for him is that he's breaking in on a winning team. He's going to be taught how to work every day. He's going to be around a winning environment. He's going to be held accountable. He's going to get his tail busted every day by guys. And that's going to make him a better player. I think too often in our league, young players are being handed minutes based upon potential rather than actual productivity. And it gives them a false, warped sense of how good they really are and the fact that maybe they don't need to work as hard. I think this kid's a gym rat. I think he's really hungry. He's got a good attitude. And I think in the environment that he's in, it's very conducive for him to grow into a good player. Is it going to happen this year where he comes in and wins a lot of games? I would say the answer is no. On the other hand, do I think that what they've picked and what they see is a long-term project because they had the luxury of that based upon where they were picking? Then I would say yes, it made sense.
Yeah, he's got a lot of hard work ahead of him, but I think he has the right attitude to do it. So this past season's team broke the franchise record in wins, obviously. It was previously held by Vince Carter's Raptors in 2000-2001. Does this make last year's team superior to Vince Carter's team?
No. Again, I've been around both teams. And in my opinion, if those two teams played a game, I would take that team, the team with Vince Carter and Oakley, Antonio Davis, Alvin Williams, Del Curry, Muggsy Bogues. Quite frankly, that's a better team. And, that's the reality of it. Would it be a close game? Very close game. But I would take the 2001 Raptors over last year's Raptors. That's not a knock on last year's Raptors. I just think that based upon just having been around both teams and having an appreciation for both teams, I would say I'd give a slight edge to the 2001 team.
Jack, I kind of want to talk about Vince Carter a bit more. This year, actually, we're coming up to a 10-year anniversary of that trade to the Nets. So can you take us back? Like, what was it like, you know, going through the motions leading up until that trade? Everything from, one, you know, Vince Carter saying he doesn't want to dunk anymore, telling, you know, whispering to the Sonics players, the Raptor plays, even if it was jokingly. And then also your reaction to the trade and what the Raptors got in return. Can you take us back that far?
Well, I think what had happened was there was a overwhelming sense of entitlement granted to him and his people that I think because of Toronto and where it was in the NBA landscape at the time, I just think they felt like, we're Toronto, we're Canada. We got to bend over backwards for this guy because, you know, why would anyone want to play here rather than, you know, holding the kid accountable and challenging him on a day-to-day basis. And I think more than anything else, I think they just got to a point where Rob Babcock came in. You had a young coach in Sam Mitchell at the time, who at the time was, you know, it was his first opportunity. And obviously Vince had played for Butch Carter, Lenny Wilkins, Kevin O'Neill, now was on his fourth coach. And in defense of Vince, he's playing for his second GM and he's on his fourth coach and he's looking around and saying, this ain't working. And the problem is, prior to that, he had been given such a sense of say and power and entitlement that when finally they said, hey, wait a minute, you know, you got to start playing better. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know, there was a breakdown in communication and a breakdown in relationship a little bit. And I just think it got to the point where, you know, I think Vince would say this now, and he has. I mean, you know, I think he was a little immature at the time.
Right.
Vince Carter's a good guy. I like Vince Carter personally. You know, it's a shame it ended the way it did. I mean, he was a great player. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it was a trade that didn't need to happen at that moment. And I think they pushed the panic button a little bit and they got fleeced by the Nets. It's one of the worst trades in the history of the game. At the same time, you know, I don't think Vince handled it well, but more importantly, I don't think the organization handled it well. It was sad. I lived through the whole thing from his first game on. And when I see Vince now, I always have a nice chat with him, and I like Vince. You know, I just think that the environment that was in place was not enough of accountability. And I think that gave him a false sense of really where he stood. And I think it created some of the problems. So as much as people want to blame Vince Carter, I think Raptor ownership and management deserves as much, maybe even more blame than he does.
Yeah, it's well said. And I think it's one of those things, you know, 10 years have passed now. Sure, 10 years from now, we'll still be talking about it. But Jack, I wanted to get your thoughts on Jonas Valanciunas. I know last year I remember asking, what is his role, the focal point of the offense? And it didn't seem like at the time Jonas was going to be ready for that role. However, you did see it, you know, as the season went on, and especially in the Brooklyn series in game one, when the Raptors seemed just shocked by the atmosphere and had the jitters, Jonas was really stepping up and going inside and getting something going. So I think you saw him mature as the season went on. But how do you see him with the team this year? What is his role going to be? Is he going to get more touches? He got a lot of touches in preseason so far, but is that going to be something that the Raptors are going to look more for down low?
I think he's earning the trust of his teammates more and more and his coaching staff. So I think his role potentially has a chance to grow. In my opinion, it has to grow. Because when you look around, for this organization to take the next step, you've got to get significant return on your first-round picks. I don't care if it's the NHL, you know, the NFL, Major League Baseball to a lesser extent because of just the volume of players. But you got to get high return on your first-round picks. I mean, you know, you lose a franchise guy like Vince Carter, for example. It had a devastating impact for a long time because you made a great investment in the guy. You know, Tracy McGrady walks out the door. That's a huge chip walking out the door with no value in return. Now you have three guys in your organization that, you know, you got to get major return on, and that is DeMar DeRozan, which I think logically you're seeing now. There's been a gradual improvement and a good return on the investment. Now you've got to see that with Terrence Ross and with Valanciunas. And in my opinion, in their third year as pros, I give Brian Colangelo, Dwayne Casey, Masai Ujiri a lot of credit for throwing those kids to the wolves and challenging them to get better and organizationally standing behind them and challenging them and helping them get better. And I fully expect not only Jonas, but Terrence to be better players, more consistent players. Are they going to be superstars? Are they going to be guys getting you 20 a night? No. But I do expect a lot more nights where you can look and say, hey, that guy's a legitimate professional player that you can count on every night. And I think for Valanciunas, he's got to show up ready to go every night. I think he's got to be more demanding of the ball in the post. He's got to do a better job of getting deep post position, getting it, being decisive, and making moves when he gets it in there. being more of a consistent guy on the boards, being more of an aware, energetic, alert defender that, you know, that can be a consistent guy in the back line of your defense. And there's no surprises anymore for him, and there's no surprise anymore for Ross. You know, Bill Parcells had a great line when he talked about development of players. Your first year, you don't know that you don't know. Your second year, you know that you didn't know. And your third year, you damn well better know. And I think we're at that point with both of these guys now where, you know, I've had an opportunity to watch both Terrence and Jonas in practice and to see them in games already. And there's nothing coming at them anymore that's blown them away mentally. And I think the game's slowing down for them now. And I fully expect them to be better players. And I think for Valanciunas, I think particularly with a team that's very perimeter-oriented, when you think of Lowry, DeRozan, Vasquez, Lou Williams, and Terrence Ross to come to mind, I think there needs to be an emphasis at times during games and more importantly over the course of a season to play inside out at times. To utilize your post guy in a traditional sense with his back to the bucket in different ways. So, again, you know, that's all part of Dwayne Casey and his staff kind of putting together different things, getting ready for the season in terms of how they're going to manufacture opportunities for him.
Coach, some of the NBA superstars have been vocally active, LeBron James, Dirk Nowitzki, on condensing the 82-game schedule. What's your opinion on that?
Ain't going to happen because, you know, when you get a 22 billion, $23 billion new TV deal, yep, that's based on dates and that's based upon 82 games. So do you think for 1 second the league, the owners, or the players are going to give back a penny of that? Absolutely not. Everybody complains about this nonsense all the time. You know, 162 games in baseball. You know, 80 in hockey, 82 in basketball. Nobody's giving money back. Come on. I mean, and you know, so the idea of cutting, 4 minutes out of a game, nice experiment. At the same time, let's go to Chicago for a second. Let's look at how Tom Thibodeau coaches his team. Do you think for 1 second in a 44-minute game that those lesser 4 minutes that the minutes are going to be distributed then differently in a 44-minute game than a 48-minute game? No, he's going to play in a 44-minute game. He's going to play Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and those guys. He's going to run those guys as hard as he would in a 48-minute game. So I think it's the reserves that are going to be impacted more in terms of their minutes than a starter. But if I'm coaching for my life, and I got to win, I'm playing my best guys every possible minute. So I think the second unit, so the idea of saying, well, it's a little less taxing on Dirk Nowitzki and that, I don't buy that one bit because you're still showing up to the gym that night and playing. Maybe the game's 4 minutes less, but you're still there. You know, now if it's 8 or 9 less games, that's a little different. You know, and there's a little less wear and tear on your body that way. But the fact that you're showing up and you're still going to play 35, 38 minutes, I don't see the real difference. But I like the idea, though, and I think it's a noble, intelligent experiment, and I'm glad they're doing it. At the same time, there's no way I ever see that happening, and maybe I'm in the minority. I don't think I am. But being around teams, being around owners and players and agents and television and radio people and entertainment people, people aren't giving that money back. And it's all about the number. Everything's pegged on the number of games you play. So now, if we cut down to 76 games and there's 6 less checks, you think the agent's going to be happy? You know, he's getting a 4% cut of that. You know, he's not giving that money back. So they'll play the 82.
Staying on the topic of money, Coach, and the new TV deal and I just want to get your opinion on the new CBA agreement that's coming up. What are the percentages that the league locks out again, and what are the percentages that it doesn't lock out?
Oh boy, man. I mean I don't know.
Right.
It's for a lot smarter minds than I. And I'll just say this. I mean, it's a home run for everybody. Don't screw it up. I mean, you got a positive problem on your hands. I mean, how do you screw that up? I mean, you know, at the end of the day, and look, I understand the whole thing with the owners saying, well, you know, 49% to 51% for the players, and they are partners. And quite frankly, I thought, 57% going to the players in the past, that was high. That was high. I mean, you know, and everyone says, well, the owners make a fortune, evaluation of franchises. Yeah, but they're the guys taking all the risk. Sure. You know, you're a player in a league where you sign a guaranteed contract. You know, you get a four-year guaranteed deal. You could dog it for those 4 years. You're guaranteed that money. You can absolutely dog it. You can get hurt, and you're still getting paid. You know, whereas the NFL, only your bonus money is guaranteed. You know, so, you know, to be in a league where you're getting guaranteed money on the life of your contract, I think it's a pretty good deal getting, you know, 49 to 51% cut, because those guys are taking all the risk. And they got, you know, so as long as everybody's fair and square and on the up and up, which sometimes you wonder whether they are in terms of revealing what exactly the profits are. But I think for the good of the game, I think it would be crazy for there to be a lockout. I just think Adam Silver strikes me as a guy that's a very bright guy, and I think that he'll reach out in the next few years to the Players Association. I'm sure he already has, and he's trying to lay the groundwork for a logical, peaceful settlement to this where everybody gets rich. Because the potential is for everybody to get rich. And I think from a Toronto standpoint, I think if you look at where a team like the Raptors were in their own building and where they are now, it's a different deal. I mean, when you're bringing in potentially $30 to $40 million more a year, you know, now – you walk around that building and it's always Leafs, Leafs, Leafs. You know, I think now you got to look and say, wow, this franchise is bringing in even a lot more money than we ever expected. So you think of the folks at Bell and Rogers that bought in combined 75% at 37.5% each. And now you look at what they bought into, and now you look at, you know, and come on. I mean, so much, you know, the people that do the buying, a big part of that is the whole, I can own the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, congratulations. You also got a soccer team and a minor hockey team and a basketball team. But suddenly that basketball team has even greater value in the building from a financial standpoint, which I think if I'm Masai Ujiri, and I know he will, he's got a bigger bat and ball now. I think he has a greater voice at the table, and I think that's a good development if you're a basketball fan in Canada.
Jack, I got to ask you more about the Eastern Conference. It got a little better over the summer with a whole bunch of different moves happening, obviously the biggest being LeBron going home to Cleveland. How much more competitive is the East this year now compared to last year?
I think the East will be, you know, will be really good. Obviously not as good as the West. We all know that. And I mentioned this earlier. I think Chicago and Cleveland are by far the best two teams. But I think when you look at the middle portion of the conference, you know, Washington and Charlotte, Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, I think, you know, and Brooklyn, if they're healthy, if Brook Lopez holds up, and I hear that he might miss a few weeks, I think legitimately, you know, there's some solid teams, you know, and I think so. It's a good competitive conference, And I thought that the conference took a step forward last year in terms of just really just being sound and competitive throughout. And there's no doubt in my mind that when you look at where it takes right now in the grand scheme of things, I think the East has two of the legitimate probably five championship contenders in the NBA. You know, and on the other hand, you could look a year ago and say, would that ninth place team in the West, where would they fit in the East? And I would still say that that ninth place team in the West probably is between a 3 and 5 seed in the East. So the East has a ways to go, but I do think that, you know, it'll be a very competitive conference.
Yeah, so returning to the Raptors again, the talent is there on offense, obviously. Like we said, it was solid. So how do you now coach to keep improving the defense and not allowing any of those crazy third-quarter runs that we saw some of last year?
I think you got to just stay true to what you believe in. I mean, Dwayne Casey is an outstanding defensive coach. He knows the ins and outs of the intricacies of it very well. And you only get what you demand. And he's got something really good at his disposal now, and that is internal competition. And if a guy wants to take plays off, guess what? You sit. You know, so for example, Terrence Ross, if you're not producing, if you're taking a play off defensively, you know what? I'll put James Johnson in place here. I'll put Lou Williams in place here. I'll play Vasquez a lot more and put DeRozan at the three. Okay, you don't want to play hard? Fine, watch. You know, and it's the same thing with one of your front court guys. If you're Amir Johnson and you're going to be inconsistent, well, I'll just play Patrick Patterson more. I'll bump James Johnson to the four. I'll do different things. You know, so you have the ability to light a fire under guys and tick guys off a little bit and say, hey, look, you know what? I'm a defensive coach. I expect it on this end. And if you don't give it to me, I got another guy that will. And just as important, there's a style of play I want you to play offensively. And if you're not going to buy into it, or you're not going to produce within the style that we have, if we're getting you open shots and you're not drilling them, I'll find someone else to drill them. You know, so it's a good thing to have. You know, there'll be times where he's going to have to really soothe and manage some egos. And you're going to have the challenge of expectations as well. But I'd much rather those problems than the alternative. I mean, you think about Dwayne Casey. I think this is the first time going into a season in Toronto, and probably the first time as a head coach in the NBA, fourth year in Toronto, he did 2 years in Minnesota, his sixth preseason, where I think he's probably feeling like this is the best chance I've ever had as a coach to have a good team. And, you know, so that I'd much rather be in that position than maybe some of the other years that when he was in Minnesota and Toronto.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I like Dwayne Casey as a coach. Speaking of the front court, Valanciunas, he's still young, of course, but he has a bit of a tendency to get into foul trouble, even though opponents only shoot 51.4% on him at the rim while he's defending it. And Amir is undersized, but he can hold opponents to 47.9 like he did last season. But between those two, do the Raptors have a solid rim protector that can take them deep into the playoffs?
You know, tough one. Because a lot depends on kind of how you situate yourself if you get in the playoffs, who you play in the first round, if you're lucky enough to get by that guy, and are you playing Chicago or are you playing Cleveland in the second round, you know, and the necessity for that. You know, and I think, you know, you talk a lot about rim protection and those numbers, which to me are, you know, I wouldn't say totally owned by those guys. I mean, a lot depends on who you're on the floor with and how good a perimeter defender you are. And in my opinion, something that's got to be improved is limiting blow-bys. And quite frankly, if Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Terrence Ross, Vasquez, Williams, James Johnson, guys like that, do a better job of keeping people in front of them and not getting exposed off the bounce, your level of rim protection increases dramatically. When you get exposed off the bounce more often, you're now putting a guy like Valanciunas in a greater chance of being in foul trouble, as is Amir Johnson. There'll be times where they'll stop things at the rim. There'll be other times where they don't. But in my opinion, if you're going to be really good and talk about going deep in the playoffs, yeah, those guys got to perform well at the rim and protect it, absolutely. But at the same time, if I'm guarding Joe Johnson, he can't be dogging me. If I'm guarding Kyrie Irving, can I keep him out of the lane and make him take contested perimeter jump shots where now I have logical blockout responsibilities in the lane? You know, so to me, it all starts on the perimeter. It's the same thing with football. It's all line play. You know, if you want to stop a terrific passer, you got to generate pass rush. Because if not, your secondary, if you give Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Philip Rivers time to sit back there, they're going to pick you apart. And it's the same thing. If you allow LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Derrick Rose to get to the rim, they're going to destroy you because they're putting it up there for a shot, or they're putting it up there for a lob, and more importantly, they're bringing Valanciunas over to help. And there's Joakim Noah now not being boxed out on the offensive glass, and he's getting a putback dunk. Or you got a Pau Gasol now who's lurking. You know, so again, I think a big part of it is your perimeter D.
Finally, Coach, I got to, first of all, give immense amount of credit to your colleague, Matt Devlin, who had such big shoes to fill. I mean, we all grew up listening to yourself and Chuck Swirsky, and Chuck was the man, and Matt Devlin came in, and you know, he rocked just as much. But we were just wondering, what's your relationship like with Chuck these days? You guys still talk?
Yeah, oh yeah. It's funny. My oldest son is a freshman in college at Loyola University Chicago. So I was out there to visit him back in late August. I had lunch with Chuck when I was out there. And I talked to Chuck probably once every 3 weeks or so. And then he'll text me on occasion, you know, during the season about a game or something that happened in the league, and I'll text him back. And but we usually talk once every 3 weeks or so, we stay pretty regularly in touch, and I consider Chuck a great friend. We had 10 wonderful years together, and then I'm starting my seventh year with Matt, and it's funny, I worked college basketball games with Matt, and I worked the WNBA for 2 years with Matt, the New York Liberty, for MSG Network. So I got to know Matt. I knew Matt for a long time before he came to Toronto. And when Chuck left and Matt's name was brought up to me as someone that they were looking at, I basically said, this guy's a home run. You know, he'd be awesome. And so I'm so happy that they decided to hire Matt. And I think he's been terrific. He really knows his ball. He's a student of the game. He knows it in and out. He's obviously achieved a tremendous amount in the broadcasting business based upon, what he's done, not only in basketball, but football and baseball and other sports. I look at Matt, and Matt is kind of, and he looks like him a little bit too. He's got the skill set of a Jim Nantz. If you said to me tomorrow, Matt Devlin's calling a baseball game, or he's calling a football game, or he's doing tennis or whatever, or golf, there's no question that he'll do an outstanding job in it. He's got that ability. He's got a unique skill set, and he's really good at it. He's energetic. He prepares his ass off. He really is a fun guy and really a joy to work with. So I've been blessed to have two incredible guys to work with, and I'm very, very lucky. And, you know, I think I'm pretty low maintenance. So, you know, I'm sure those guys, I don't require a lot as an analyst. But, you know, what I like is to have the guy sitting next to me be somebody that I can have a good relationship with off the court. And I could say honestly that I have an amazing relationship with Matt, and I had a wonderful relationship with Chuck. And I think a lot of times that comes out on the air because, you know, I've called a lot more Raptor losses than I have wins. Mm-hmm. And when you're going through tough seasons and tough times, you got to be able to keep your energy level up, and you got to be able to have a good time and a few laughs, and keep people at home entertained. And I think a part of that is just your rapport with the guy you're talking to. And I think people at home can get a real good sense of whether these guys actually like each other or not, and whether they're actually paying attention to each other when they talk. So I feel really good about having Matt as a guy that, you know, that is a voice of basketball in Canada, and I hope I'm lucky enough to work with him for a long time.
Absolutely, the chemistry certainly doesn't go unnoticed. You guys do a fantastic job. We always look forward to you. As a matter of fact, when I'm at a bar watching the game, I always ask to turn the audio on because I got to hear the analytical part from you and just the smooth play-by-play from Matt. But before we let you go, Coach, can we close it out with a little bit of rapid-fire questions? We'll call this the catch-and-shoot segment. I'll pass some questions on to you, and you can shoot a quick answer.
You got it.
Let's say the Bulls are playing the Raptors, and you meet up with good old Chuck Swirsky. Are you going out for some salami and cheese, or are you going to grab a Nathan's hot dog with some onions, baby? Onions.
I'm going for the Nathan's hot dog, onions, baby, because I'm from Brooklyn and Nathan's.
Right.
I grew up going to Coney Island, so no doubt I'm going Nathan's.
Number two, you're on a road trip, that Florida road trip, the back-to-back Orlando-Miami. You want to cool off from the tropical sunshine. Are you grabbing a Bacardi with ice, or are you going for a smooth Miller Genuine Draft?
Probably a little bit of both with a nice cigar.
Number three, who's hosting your birthday party, Drake or Syracuse alumni Leo Routens?
Well, you know what? I've never partied with Drake, but I have with Leo, and I know Leo would throw an amazing party. So right now Leo's in the lead, but I haven't had the opportunity to hang with Drake. I've met Drake on a number of occasions, and he's actually a really good guy and knows his ball too. So he looks like a guy to have a lot of fun with, but, when he invites me to a party, I don't think – if I invited him, he'd probably go, who's this guy? But if I ever get invited to a party, I'll let you know about that. But right now, I'd have to give a major leg up to Leo.
Number four, who are you putting on your money for a game of one-on-one, Matt Devlin or Rod Black?
Well, let's say I'm going to go hoops, I'd go Matt Devlin. If I'm going hockey, football, baseball – I'm going Roddy Black. And particularly if it's figure skating, I'm definitely going Rod Black.
All right, Jack, last question. What was your best memory from last year's playoff season?
Two things. I think at home, actually three things. At home, the national anthem. You know how you just close your eyes and you just remember things really jump out of you? At the home games, the national anthem, that was awesome. Number two, you know, obviously all the folks outside at Maple Leaf Square, that was amazing. And number three, for me as a Brooklyn guy, having an opportunity to call games in the borough of New York where I grew up, that was an absolute thrill being back in New York and having a that was a real thrill. But I think those would be the three things that jumped out at me. And I'll say this too. When Matt Devlin, you were asking me before about Matt, when Matt came to Toronto, I said to him, I said, Matt, and particularly the first year, you know, first few years, the team wasn't doing very well. And I said to him, I said, this place has amazing potential. You have no idea. And, you know, Matt has called games in Memphis and Charlotte. And I said, when he came to Toronto, I said, look, I've experienced the whole Vinsanity era and all that. I said, Toronto rocks. It's one of the great NBA cities. And if we could just ever get it together and string together of year by year by year where you're in the playoffs, where you're in the discussion, I think finally people around the NBA will really notice that it's one of the great markets in the league. So I'll never forget after the national anthem was sung in game one, I turned to Matt, and he's just, you know, you could tell he's like, wow, this place is rocking. And I said, this is what I'm talking about. This is Toronto. This is, you know, this is what it's all about now. This is a market that still, even though this year is its 20th year, is still figuring it all out. And if Toronto, as an organization, as a franchise, ever figures it out, and they're getting closer, I think the thing's got amazing potential. Amazing potential. And I'm tired of hearing about New York and L.A. and Chicago and ESPN doing everything possible to direct players to those few markets. I think Toronto has one of the amazing messages and great places to play. And I think, you know, people saying, well, that We the North thing was kind of, you know, hokey, a little catchy. I think it was great. And you know why? Because it's about time people stick their chest out and say, you know what? We're planting the flag. We've arrived. And you can't ignore us anymore. And we're here to stay. And we're going to be really good. And I think Toronto has been the most underperforming franchise in the NBA in the last 19 years. When you look at the totality of it, based upon its potential, its wealth, its size, I think it's been, you know, there's been times where you've looked and said, you know, they couldn't plan a one car parade, you know, but I think they're figuring it out. And I think when you now, it's a market with just absolutely amazing potential that, if done right, it the sky's the limit.
You gave me goosebumps with that whole spiel. I wish we could frame everything you just said and post it everywhere. Well, really, really agree with everything you just said. And Jack, it's been an absolute pleasure. Your wisdom, your knowledge, your input and all this is really much appreciated and always welcome here. So thank you so much for joining us, Jack.
Guys, my pleasure, and hopefully we'll do it again, maybe during the playoffs. Hopefully there'll be a playoff edition of this, but really appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and it was my pleasure to be on with you.
Thank you, Jack. And guys, you know where to find us, RaptorsWatch.com. Thanks for tuning in. Follow us on Twitter, Raptors_Watch. Till next time, guys. Take care.